underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Senator Ralph Franken has represented the state of Minnesota in the U.S. Senate since 2009. Before entering politics, he was one half of the comedy team Franken and Davis with his longtime writing partner Tom Davis. They were two of the original writers and performers on Saturday Night Live. He worked on and off for that show through 1995. He was the host of Air America's The Al Franken Show. His best-selling books include Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, and Why Not Me? The Inside Story of the Making and Unmaking of the Franken Presidency. His new book is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. In it, he tells the story of an award-winning comedian who decided to run for office and discovered why award-winning comedians tend not to do that. It's a great honor to welcome Senator Al Franken.
Well, thank you for having me, Joe.
Thank you very much for being with us. You talk in the book about the dehumorizer of what you went through from that that switch in career from knowing people, knowing you and loving you as a very successful comedian and writer to a United States senator. What was that process like, and how? At what point did you start to realize that there was this, that the dehumorizer was necessary?
There were a couple of dehumorizers. The first one was the Republicans built a $15 million machine with Russian and Israeli technology that would take all the context and irony and hyperbole out of humor and leave you with something that they could attack me with. That was the most unpleasant part of the campaign, because when you do satire, you use those tools. When you take those things out, you can make any joke that anybody tells sort of offensive. The campaign in 08 became very unpleasant very quickly, and it was my opponent, the incumbent Senator Norm Coleman, really had nothing to run on. He had been a big, big Bush supporter from the time he got in until after the 2006 elections. Then he kind of made a turn to look moderate by doing procedural votes with Democrats. It's what Tip O'Neill used to describe as someone who's always there when we don't need him. He really had nothing to run on except tearing me down. So it was a really ugly campaign.
I'm sure you could say this in any partisan race, but he seems, in of course, in your account.
Yeah, it's my account. It's not his book.
It's my book. A fairly despicable human being.
Well, you know, a big part of the reason I ran was that Paul Wellstone, who was a friend of mine, had died in a plane crash with his wife and aides and pilot and co-pilot, of course, and his daughter, less than 2 weeks before the election in 2002. And this was a very searing and traumatic experience. Coleman got elected about 2 or 3 months after he's in office. He did a roll call. A Hill newspaper did a profile of him in which he said, "I'm a 99% improvement over Paul Wellstone." And that ticked me off. I read that, and before that, I had never said, someday I'm going to run for something. And I just said to myself, who's going to run against this guy? And I wasn't thinking necessarily be me, but that started a process of Franny and I had become empty nesters, so we moved to Minnesota, and I explored this, and not necessarily thinking I was going to do it. But I started doing bean feeds around the state. We have the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and Hubert Humphrey helped start that party, putting the Democrats together with the Farmer Labor Party. And so DFL have bean feeds. And sometimes they're not a bean feed. Sometimes it's a walleye fry. Sometimes it's a spaghetti dinner. Sometimes it's a burger bash. Sometimes they roast a pig. But that is sort of the organizing principle of DFL politics. And in Minnesota, and I started going to bean feeds. really liked going to them, and I liked hearing from people. I was doing a radio show at the time. I'd have guests like Elizabeth Warren talking about the middle class squeeze and talking about how Americans had gone bankrupt because, in some part, to a medical crisis. I knew that, but I saw it when I go to Bean Feeds and go around Minnesota and see bulletin boards with a notice stuck up for a spaghetti dinner or for a family that had gone bankrupt because someone got sick. And so healthcare became very important. College affordability became an important issue because I was experiencing it. It became personal because it was personal to the people of Minnesota. And as the campaign progressed, it became much, much less about who's going to beat Norm Coleman and much, much more about what Paul said politics is about. He says it's not about winning for the sake of winning. It's not about money. Politics is about improving people's lives. And that's why this book is kind of an answer to the question I get asked the most, which is being a United States senator as much fun as working on Saturday Night Live? And the answer to that, of course, is no. Why would it be? It's not as much fun, but it's the best job I've ever had because I get to improve people's lives.
Actually, very little of the book has to do with your comedy career and really talks about the race and why you ran.
And the Senate.
And the Senate, of course.
More than half the book is about me in the Senate.
I do want to ask about the Air America show when you were on the Al Franken show. One of the things that struck me about that show when I would listen to it is I expected there to be the very funny Al Franken. You were a great host, and it certainly had its humorous moments, but you were very serious. That was really starting the path, wasn't it, to talk about these very important issues?
Anybody who wrote a good book about the war in Iraq was on the show. Anyone who wrote a great book about the war in Iraq was on the show all the time, like Tom Ricks. But we also talked about issues like the middle class squeeze. I had this notion of running for the Senate. I wanted to at least learn something while I was doing this show. And so I did a lot of reading in preparation for the show. I didn't do a book show like you do, but in some ways it did. And I did a lot of reading and a lot of reading on issues that were important to me and I think important to the American people. I had written a book called Rush Limbaugh's Big Fat Idiot and Other Observations. And my idea was not to do the mirror image of his show, but to do a scrupulously intellectually honest show, which, of course, is the opposite of his show.
When Lying Liars came out, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them came out, I saw you at Book Expo, and I was in the room, and it was you. Pat Schroeder was the moderator. Mm-hmm. It was you, Bill O'Reilly, and God lover Molly Ivins.
Yes.
Your book, I mean, it was very much based at Bill and his ilk.
Yeah, the subtitle of that, of course, is Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right. And you laugh because it was an allusion to Fox, and it was ironic. And it turns out when you use a trademark in a book title, case law says you can do that if you use allusion and irony and wordplay. And they sued me. And I think it, in no small part, came from that event. We were on C-SPAN, and I kind of proved that Bill was a liar.
The thing about watching that event, though,
yeah.
My God. First of all, it seemed like you were having a great time. Everyone else, I think, well, forget who was on the dais, but in the audience was like, oh, God. It's, oh, really? Oh, God. And yet you were so prepared. And I bring this up because it came to me in watching you in the Jeff Sessions confirmation hearings. It came to me when you were questioning Betsy DeVos. It's that same kind of preparation and being ready for the big fight the next day, isn't it?
You know, if you come to office and are serving the people, you really owe it to them to work hard and be prepared. And I think you're seeing the same thing from the president now, President Trump. The studying that he does, the granular knowledge that he has of all realms of public policy.
But am I right that you enjoy that aspect of it?
I do. I like to think of myself as intellectually curious. I imagine you doing a book show. I hope you are. I mean, if you've chosen to do that. And also, I think I owe it to the people of Minnesota to be prepared. And so I went to the Senate to be a workhorse and to get things done for people. And I kind of had to prove that to the people of Minnesota because the campaign had been so vicious. And I clobbered Norm Coleman by the smallest clobbering in history at 312 votes.
Right.
I think I had a lot to prove to the people of Minnesota. So I kept the jokes under wrap for 6 years until I got reelected by a very comfortable margin in a very tough year for Democrats 2014. That liberated me a little bit. I think the people of Minnesota said, "Yeah, Al, you're our senator and we know you're doing the work."
Al Franken's new book is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. There's a story in the book, and I'm hoping you'll tell it, because to me it's sort of, it gives an idea of your on the job training of becoming a senator. So this is actually during that very, very rough period where there's the recount, the loss. This went on for 6 months, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was 8 months.
8 months.
8 months, yeah.
From November to, you didn't go until
July. Mm-hmm.
So prior to that, you have a meeting with the Vice President of the United States,
mm-hmm.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, who I respect a lot and really like a lot. And yeah, this is just a few weeks before I'm seated. And I've won the recount. I've won the court battle over that. It's gone to the Minnesota Supreme Court, but it's pretty clear that I'm going to be seated. And so I'm meeting with the vice president, and I get there with my wife and with Stephanie Shriok, my campaign manager, and we're in his office. We're waiting a little bit. He comes in, and we say our hellos, and then he makes a big point out of saying, look, I've been here for 40 years in Washington. Let me tell you how you get here where I am in the vice president's office and how you ascend in stature in Washington. And the way to do that is never promise anything you can't deliver. Never promise anything you can't deliver. And I said, okay, I'm not going to do that. And we talked about some things that were going on, but then he got pretty quickly to this. He said, look, when you get to the Senate, you're going to be seated. I don't know if it's going to be 2 weeks, 2 months, but when you're seated, we're going to have to get you something. We're going to have to give you something that you can give to the people of Minnesota. And you can take credit for. And I went, oh, well, okay. And he said, what do you want? And I hadn't thought about this coming into the meeting, but I immediately thought of a rail line, a commuter rail line that was supposed to go from Minneapolis to St. Cloud, which is a city about 100 miles north of the Twin Cities. It's called the North Star Line. It had only gone from Minneapolis to a city called Big Lake, and that was about halfway. That helped commuters who lived somewhere between Big Lake and Minneapolis, but it had been intended to be aligned so that people from St. Cloud could get to Minneapolis, maybe even the work to commute. So I said, well, I guess, finishing the North Star line. And I couldn't tell whether he knew what I was talking about or not. And I said, this is, and I explained what it was. And I said, in fact, you went to St. Cloud after the stimulus package passed and announced, you said, we are going to finish this under the stimulus package. And he said, then that's what we're going to give you. That's what you're going to do. You are going, when you get in, you're going to get the extension of the North Star line and you're going to deliver that for the people of Minnesota. And I went, oh, that's great. That's great. And then we said our goodbyes, and I'm leaving. Then I leave his office, and I pass by Ron Klain's office, who is his chief of staff, and he had been Gore's chief of staff as well when he was vice president. And so he, as I'm going out, he steps out of his office and says, how'd it go? I said, it went great. We're going to get the extension of the North Star line. And Klain kind of goes, how much does that cost? I said, oh, about $135 million. And then he goes, no. And the name of that chapter is Welcome to the NFL. Because I had thought, like, after Vice President Biden and said, well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to give you that North Star one. Okay, great. I thought, like, okay, this is how things are done. I'm not, this isn't so hard, this Senate thing. I'm going to be a giant of the Senate. And then, and we never got the extension. Never promise anything you can't deliver.
Well, and that had to have been extremely instructive as you go through this course.
It was frustrating because I'd call Klain back. And I go, like, you know, he did say, never promise anything you can't deliver. And we never got that.
You write in the book about working with your Republican colleagues in the Senate, and it, I think it's safe to say that that's a mixed bag. You have good relationships, you have maybe
some
not
some
so
are
good
better than others. You have to get along with your colleagues, and your word has to be good. That's first, I think. They've got to be able to trust you, and so your word has to be good. And you don't have to be great friends with them. You don't have to go out, you know, for dinner or drinks or stuff like that, but you got to be. You got to be straight with your colleagues. That's first. But also, it does help. I do. I actually was a comedian for a reason. And I can make my colleagues. There were, you know, I had a little challenge with the Republicans when I first came in because I had used a lot of my humor to heap scorn and ridicule on Republicans. But, man, right away, they just went, I laugh a lot. My staff can tell where I am on the floor by how loud my laugh is. And my Republican colleagues right away went, oh, I get it. He likes to laugh. He's funny. Jim DeMint, a very right-wing then senator from South Carolina, the first day I was there, came up to me. He said, how are things on the far left? I said, they're great. How are things on the nutcase right? And he laughed, and we became friends based solely on a relationship of just giving each other crap. And Tom Coburn, Tom doesn't have a great sense of humor, and he admits it. He's one of the few people who admit they don't have a good sense of humor. I mean, he'll actually say in a hearing, I don't get Al's jokes. But our first five interactions had not been good. They hadn't been terrible, but they just hadn't been good. We just didn't connect. So I said, Tom, can I take you to lunch? He said, tell you what, you take me to breakfast. So we go to breakfast in the Senate dining room. We're there. It's 8 in the morning. I said, look, for the next 45 minutes or whatever this is, let's have fun, okay? He goes, sure. And I said, we can talk about our families. We can talk about politics. We can talk about our careers, but let's have fun. He goes, sure, fun. I go, okay, careers. Now, he's a doctor. He had been an obstetrician gynecologist before being a senator. I said, now, you're a doctor. Let me ask you something. To be a doctor in Oklahoma, do you have to have any formal education at all? And he goes, yes, you've got to go to medical school. And I said to him, okay, Tom, that was a joke. And that's what I used to do in my career. Then we had a great breakfast. And I think during the breakfast, I taught him what a joke was, what the proper reaction to a joke is. And he wrote me a note saying, you know, really great breakfast. That was a lot of fun. And we got along after that very well. And I called Tom when I was writing this book, because I try to observe the protocol that if you tell a story that makes I don't think this makes him look bad, but I mean, if the possibly from that colleague's perspective could make them look bad, that you get their approval.
Right.
So I called him up, and he was very Tom, because he goes, I said, you remember that? And yeah, I was wondering, we have a First Amendment. You can write whatever you want. He kind of got mad at me for asking him. And I said, well, I was just trying to, you know, observe a courtesy. And he went, well, you're a gentleman, but I'm going to write anything I want when I write about my, you know. And I go, okay. And then we talked about our grandchildren, and that was very nice.
Ted Cruz.
Yes. He is sort of the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah.
Ted makes really very, very little effort. Remember that I said the first thing is about you got to be straight?
Yes.
So I've made an exception in this book with him to kind of prove the rule. He went on the floor and called Mitch McConnell a liar, which is against protocol. And also Ted just makes really no effort to work with others. And he's kind of a toxic coworker. He's the guy who microwaves fish in the in the kitchen at work. You know, he's. I write about it in the book where right after Sandy Hook, I had signed on to the assault weapons ban that Dianne Feinstein had offered. And I don't know if he knew that, if I had signed on, but he said to me on the floor, he said, you know, anyone who has supports the assault weapons ban is engaged in sophistry. Sophistry is an SAT word, and I only knew it. The last I'd seen the word was when I was preparing for SATs. And we did SAT prep in my high school. And we had a vocabulary book, and sophistry was in it. And sophistry is a form of debate or argument that's designed to be deceitful. That's what it is. And I knew what it was, and I think lawyers use it a lot because that's how they describe their opponent's reasoning. I said, huh, why am I engaged in sophistry? And he said, well, Clinton's own Justice Department did a report on the effects of the assault weapons ban and said it didn't work. And I said, no, it didn't. They issued a report 2 years later and said there wasn't enough data to determine whether it worked or not. In fact, there were some indications it had, but he goes, well, you just read the report. So I take the subway back to the Hart building, and I find my counsel, who also went to Harvard Law with, not with Ted, younger than Ted, obviously, but I say to him, Ted Cruz just said to me that anyone who is for the assault weapons ban is engaged in sophistry. And he said, what's sophistry? And I explained it to him. He said, well, why do you say that? And I said, well, he said that Clinton's own Justice Department, their report on the assault weapons ban, said that it didn't work. And he said, no, no, no. What it said was, and he said exactly what I said. And I said, I know that. Can you prepare me a memo quoting the report so that I can show it to Ted? So he does that. And a few days later, I'm on the floor and I have this thing. And I said, well, Ted, I guess you owe me an apology. And he said, why? What? And I said, well, you know, a while ago you said to me that anybody who is for the assault weapons ban is engaged in sophistry. And he said, no, I didn't. You didn't expect that end to the story, did you?
Well, only because I had read the
No, book. No, yeah, but yeah, when you were reading
yes.
it.
Yes. it's in the chapter called Sophistry. Yes.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, I did, or no, I didn't, or really, or I don't remember that. It was, no, I didn't.
Well, we're kind of getting a lot of that now, aren't we? From this White House.
Well, from this White House, oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is an issue, and I talk about this in the book, about it's almost adorable that I wrote a book called Lies and Lying Liars, who tell them a fair amount to look at the right, and that people bought it and were intrigued by the idea that people lie and that I proved it. And, and now it's like, oh, okay, people just...
It's accepted.
Accepted. It's like you just, that's, you know, and I think that, you know, people who voted for Trump also, you know, don't take them literally, take them seriously, that kind of thing. And I kind of understand that, but the constant lying I find an affront.
This would make me feel so much better if you told me this. I don't know if you will or not, but it would make me feel so much better if there's a lot of eye rolling even among your Republican colleagues.
Oh God. Oh yes. Well, then feel much, much better.
Okay.
No, my Republican colleagues, they're scared of this, and. You know, the base has kind of stuck with Trump, his base, and that's their base. So they can't publicly say what they say privately. And this is not all of them, but it's a lot of them are very concerned.
Last question. Being a satirist, being a comedian, do you enjoy the satire and the comedy that's coming out of this, whether it's John Oliver, Samantha Bee, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers, Stephen Colbert?
Yes. All those people are doing very good stuff, and that's what I did. You know, and the Saturday Night Live stuff this year has been very good. The show is always spotty. It's a live 90-minute show, and even in like the first 5 years when we could do no wrong, we had spotty shows. And but this year I thought it was a very good year on Saturday Night Live. I love John Oliver. I love Samantha Bee. Seth Meyers, I think, is doing great. And I think Colbert has really found, again, what he does. I thought the Colbert Report was a brilliant, brilliant right. show. And I think that those chops are back, and they lead the they open the show every week or every night.
Senator Al Franken's latest is Al Franken, Giant of the Senate. It is published by 12. Senator, a great pleasure and an honor to have you on our program.
Joe, thank you so much. This has been fun.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.